rock and roll.
I don't think so.
You can. If I did, I don't do it, but then I have to.
Hey. You deleted it.
Yeah.
Hi.
How are you?
See?
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Thank you. It's 10 o'clock on April 5th. This is the Internal Affairs meeting, and we have with us today eight folks from AT&T. Elise Bannister, who's Vice President of Regulatory and Public Policy, and then we also have Mary Rose
Siriani.
Thank you. Thank you. And she's the External Affairs Manager. And they have graciously offered to provide us some information on their low-cost internet program that's being deployed in April of this year. So it's very timely and relevant, and I think we're thrilled to have you here today.
Thank you.
So welcome, and this is kind of an informal meeting, so please feel free to stop if commissioners have questions. Just kind of an easygoing meeting, so we welcome you here.
Thank you, Chair. And good morning, everybody. We are happy to be here this morning with some good news about a program that we are rolling out. April 22nd is the official date of when the low-price internet offer will be available to customers in 21 states that AT&T has wireline internet access service. So we're here with good news, and I was thinking of the basketball game last night.
Oh, yeah.
Some of us may have watched. And it really is all about access to the net. And
Bravo.
So, but you know, that is a game, and we can all laugh about it, and it is entertainment, but it's also very serious having internet access for customers, particularly with we all watch our budgets, but there are some folks that it does drain resources, but it is a need that they have. And we're here to tell you that we're committed to rolling out Access from AT&T is the name of the program, but more importantly, it's about connections. It's about connecting people to what they need, when they need it, and at a price that they can afford. So basically, the Access from AT&T program is a commitment that we made with our acquisition of DirecTV, as you may have heard. But I did want to tell you that we're going above and beyond and taking this very seriously, not just in Florida, but throughout our company. Mary Rose is going to talk a little bit about the program itself and some of the ways that we are conducting outreach locally around the state of Florida, and also with some of the agencies that access the customers that would be eligible for this. And the main criteria is that for eligibility is that they be a SNAP household participant. So I guess a criteria that we thought would work best because it goes across state lines. It isn't specific to any particular state. It's a federal program, as you're well aware. So we welcome the opportunity to be here and to tell you about this. The website is actually up and running, but there's more to come. And actually on the 22nd, that's when the website will make it, it'll be available for folks to actually go in and see if they are, if there is the service available to them technically where they currently are. The other thing that it'll do, and Mary Rose will speak to this too a little bit, is that it will give access to information and collateral that folks in organizations and nonprofits and agencies can either download, or they can be connected with AT&T to get that collateral out to them in the form that they need. So to get the word out to constituents that they reach that we might not. So with that, I want to turn it over to Mary Rose, and she's going to be using a presentation that's one tool that we have to be used with organizations to try to get them involved and to try to bring awareness to them. But after the 22nd, we'll actually have a portal that we can walk folks through, too, so there'll be more to come.
Great.
So with that, Mary Rose.
Thank you. Thank you, Elise. So as Elise said, it is Access from AT&T, and as Elise alluded to, that the technology has the ability to do just about everything these days. Our kids use it for homework, you know, look for jobs online, look up health questions, reasons, just about everything. So probably everybody in this room has many access to the internet, you know, whether it's phones, home computers, such. So what we want to do is to ensure that everybody, whether you are lower at a lower price or not, it's available. So our new low-cost offer, as Elise said, it actually begins April the 22nd is the day that we will roll it out. And SNAP is the qualifying program that you will be eligible for the offer if it is technically available in the area that you live.
Marios, can I stop you
sure.
right there? And just could you, for the folks that are tuning in here, can you just do an overview of how to qualify under SNAP?
How do you qualify under SNAP? Sure. The Department of Children and Families here in Florida is the qualifier for SNAP. And it is my understanding, and somebody here could correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding for SNAP, as all DCF programs, is that it is online. You have to go to one of their offices throughout the state, and they have a lot of community partners. I believe there's probably hundreds of different locations throughout the state that a constituent, a customer, can actually go to. And at those locations, you can use a computer there, or if you have access to a computer at home or, you know, friend, families. But it is online, an application that you go through. And from that point, I'm not really sure. I think, and sorry for not knowing for sure, but I believe that they are then sent a letter from DCF saying that they are eligible for the program.
And the good news is, too, that once they're eligible, Mary Rose, I believe, once they're eligible in receiving SNAP, that's why we rely on being SNAP participant, so that they have a card or some kind of verification,
sure.
so that we're not getting into the personal information about a particular person.
Right, which we'll get to in a later slide, but since we're talking about it, as Elise said, they do get a letter, whether I just don't know whether it's emailed or sent in the mail. I think it may vary. I'm not quite sure, but they do have something in hand, and so when they do the application process for the low price broadband offer, in the actual application, once they're eligible, they send us that piece of paper, which then we would retain. So they actually have something to give us.
Commissioner Brzee has a question.
Sure.
So are you talking about a program that's an overlay to the Lifeline program, or are you talking about a program that is, you know?
It is a completely separate program to Lifeline. Lifeline is a credit on the telephone bill.
As you well know, right?
As everybody in this room, I'm sure, is very well aware. For AT&T's purposes, it is in Florida on the wireline side, but there are a lot of wireless carriers out there that also offer it. This program is in addition to, it is an actual service, internet service, that AT&T will provide. So you could be a customer who could be eligible for both or not. Depending, if you're eligible under Lifeline, say because of your national school lunch, which that's not a good example, because if you're national school lunch, you're SNAP. Yeah. I don't know. Section 8 housing, and you don't have SNAP qualification, although you probably could get both, then, you know, you would not be eligible for the low-price broadband if it was only under Section 8. But my understanding on SNAP, I believe from what I looked at, I think it varies a little bit, but I think it's 200% of the
poverty level.
Yeah, so
there should be a lot of overlap.
There's probably not many programs on Lifeline that you qualify for, that you wouldn't qualify for SNAP, that you could also then get the low cost broadband offer. I mean, that's just, I don't know that 100%, but I'm pretty sure that with the 200%, you could probably get any of those in. So does that help?
Yeah, I'll probably have a question a little bit later.
That's fine. I invite questions.
Thank you.
So just a little bit about the offer itself. It is a 10 megabit per second download speed for $10 a month, where it is technically available. If the 10 is not available, then it would be the 5 at $10. And if the 5 is not available, then 3 megabit at $5. And that is per month, and that will be for 12 months. And then the customer would have to recertify that they are still eligible for the SNAP program. And we will send notification and plenty of time for them to recertify so that there is no break in the service. And if they were to apply in the last year of the program, which I did not mention, but it is a four-year commitment, it would be for a 12-month period, even if they applied and were eligible within, say, the last couple months of the program. And as I said, the qualifying households are the SNAP in the 4 years. And as Elise said, this presentation is really geared towards how we're doing the outreach for the program. And so what this slide does is just tell you a little bit about how we're currently outreach is being performed throughout the state. Third parties, community-based organizations, the website is up and running, has quite a bit of information on it. It has Q&As on it. It does not have the portal on it yet. It will be up and running on April the 22nd. At that point, a customer could go to the portal, actually put in their address, and it would tell them whether they actually qualify or not qualify, if they're eligible for the service at the address that they live in. For those of you who've probably, you know, looked for internet, maybe, I'm not sure about in Tallahassee, but at least in AT&T generally, that's pretty much how you do it. You can go to a site and put your address in, and it'll tell you if there's what's available at your address. So that will be on the portal, and as well, they could, there will be applications available on the portal. But another reason for the outreach, for those who maybe, you know, don't have access to the portal or to a computer, we are hopeful that the outreach will get the information to the constituents. They can get applications and information. They can mail them in. They can fax them in. So there's various ways that they can get the applications in. They don't just have to go online, although the portal will act for much more than just for the consumer, for organizations to get information, to then use that to get it out to their constituents that they touch.
And we will be promoting a 1-800 number as well in case they want to call in. And I know you're going to talk about the group.
Sure. Let me just mention that it is a separate organization within AT&T that will handle calls just for the low cost or low price broadband offer. So they will have, you know, undivided attention from us if and when they call in about their applications or eligibility. So that will be up and running on April the 22nd also. So just a little bit about the outreach. There's direct outreach, which, you know, AT&T itself will do. Indirect outreach, as I said, collateral in the offices, bulletin boards, and such. And just a little bit about that, our external affairs managers that are throughout the states are reaching out to organizations that they have relationships with and providing the information, and we will work with them to ensure that they get all of the collateral that they might want. I also have been working and reaching out to some of the state agencies. I have talked to the Department of Children and Families. I'm working with their community partners throughout the state to see if they're interested in getting information, providing it to their constituents where they can. I've also contacted and talked to Department of Education and the Department of Agriculture in their food and school lunch program. There's still conversations going on. We don't have anything set in place as to what we're going to do yet, but we're hopeful that, you know, the more that we can talk to and get the information out, the more people know about it, the more people will take the opportunity. So I think that pretty much hits all of those.
Marios, and if I could stop you, I mean, there are other companies that provide similar programs in the state.
There are,
right?
There are.
And the outreach efforts are probably similar, and you know, at the Public Service Commission, I mean, if this is something appropriate for us to at least educate those that could qualify, I'm sure we would welcome the opportunity, but we'd have to look into it a little bit more and see how we can distribute those materials. What is the anticipated participation rate you guys have expected those that would qualify based on those that are eligible currently?
Well, funny that you asked. I can tell you that in Florida, there's about 3.7 million SNAP participants. Based on an estimate, I would say that in the AT&T footprint, the wireline area, there's probably about 2.3 million SNAP participants. Now, granted, we all know that we've done this over and over again for Lifeline, and we know that just because people are participants, that does not mean that the enrollment rate will be such. So, you know, I don't know how many will take advantage of it, but those are at least the eligible buckets of folks in the AT&T footprint that are eligible.
Obviously, an outreach is critical to be able to capture any of the efforts that you're deploying here. So. On that front, again, we'll definitely look into helping in any way that we can and if we're able to. So,
sure. We appreciate, too, that it does have to be competitor neutral. Mm-hmm. We certainly understand that. We welcome any help that you can give, not only with the outreach, but if anyone is aware, anyone within the sound of our voices, is aware of an organization that does have direct contact with these folks or that might. Whether it be the food bank, we're looking at National School Lunch Program, but we're looking beyond that. We're trying to get even more local as well. But we welcome any suggestions that anyone has. Really.
Right. Thank you. Our staff is looking into it. So
great.
Thank you.
Great. So, and Connected Nation, that y'all are probably all aware of the name. This is actually an organization that AT&T is using as a third party. Partner to actually get the collateral out so that if there is an organization that is interested in getting the information out to their constituents, Connected Nation will then partnering with us, and they will, you know, whether it's mailing flyers out to them, getting the collateral to them. So Connected Nation is just that it will play a very, very big part in ensuring that the correct organizations, you know, actually get the information to them, be able to get it to the end users. Digital literacy, the Digital U, this is a website that we have used for a while that has excellent information on it, whether it just educates people the best practices of technology, just generally speaking. And it's not specific to the AT&T low-price broadband offer. It will have a link to it, as you can see on the bottom. The website will also include information on the access from AT&T. But I put it up there just because it is just an excellent site for end users to go to learn and educate themselves about technology, generally speaking. And it will have a link to the access from Tallahassee, access from AT&T program on it. So. We have if you just type in Digital U, it'll come up. It's just a great site for folks to look at. So, and as we all know, access to the internet has probably changed our lives and how we live on a daily basis. I know it has mine from just talking to my children who are in college or out of college and how they're keeping up with their friends. And I was saying, I didn't have that when I got out of college. You called their home number and their parents said, they no longer live here. They've moved on. Like, you know, now you just Google them and, you know, look them up on Facebook. So, you know, access to the internet plays a lot of roles across everybody's life. So it's important, and it provides a lot of interaction that's necessary in today's world. And there are some slides in the appendix. If y'all have any questions about this, I'd be glad to go through them. I wasn't going to go in detail. This just kind of lays out the process that a customer would use. And if you have questions about it, I'd be glad to talk about it.
Thank you, Mary Rose and Elise. And commissioners, are there any follow-up questions for either of them?
again, thank you, and thank you. We'll definitely be, our staff will be in contact with you further.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Friends. Legislative update.
Are they done?
I think they're done. Hi, Mark.
Hey.
Welcome.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Mark Futrell with staff. I wanted to update you on some activities in the legislative session that since our last meeting with you on February 23rd. As per normal, most of the bills we were tracking did not pass. There were a few that did pass of note. I wanted to just briefly kind of update you on that. Probably the most significant bill was House Bill 491, Water and Wastewater, by Representative Smith. And we were also tracking the companion by Senator Hayes, 534. At the end, the issue that was of most note between the two chambers was the rate case expense criteria that the Senate was supporting. Ultimately, that the House did not accept that language, and the Senate ultimately at the end receded from its amendment onto the House bill, and the bill ultimately passed. It was submitted to the governor on March 30th. He has until April 14th to take action, so we're monitoring that closely. The bill, as you know, includes many of the provisions that were recommended by the Water Study Committee. That was noted by Senator Hayes on the floor. And so we'll be following that language depending upon how the outcome of the bill and noting possible actions, if any, the commission may have to take in implementation. A couple other bills of note that I wanted to just mention briefly. We were following the utility projects bills, House Bill 347 by Representative Sproles and the companion in the Senate by Senator Legg. Essentially, it authorized certain entities to finance the cost of water and wastewater utility projects by issuing bonds, and then authorizing an entity to recover those costs from customers. We were tracking this bill because at one point there was some language amended on it that would have impacted the commission. Ultimately, that language was removed through an amendment. The bill did pass, and the governor has signed the bill on March 25th. So as it stands, there's no direct impact on the commission with that bill, but that was one that was definitely in play there. And then, finally, there was a bill of note just in monitoring, particularly those that impact our utilities. There was a House Bill 1355 on Gainesville Regional Utilities. It would have revised the governance of GRU. That bill passed and was presented to the governor on March 10th. He, however, vetoed the bill on March 25th, so that will not be going forward. There are several other bills that we were following. We will be providing you with a written summary of those bills. Once the process plays out with presenting the governor with bills and his time for taking action, a significant amount of bills have already run through the process. There's a few still trickling to his desk. And so we'll be following that closely, and we'll be, like I said, providing you with some more material going forward.
Thank you, Mark. Commissioners, any questions on any of the updates? And I want to say thank you on this session, Mark, and you and your staff spent a lot of time providing information to legislators. I know personally I witnessed it, and appreciate all the work that you guys did this session.
Thank you. And I do want to thank Catherine Pennington and Nancy Harrison and working with our legal colleagues on all the work they did on the bills, as well as our technical staff. When we needed them, they made themselves available. So we appreciate the teamwork.
Commissioner Graham has a question.
House Bill 355, what was that going to do to the GRU?
It was going to change the governance structure of the utility. Currently, the City Commission itself, the elected members of the City Commission, make decisions regarding the utility. It would have set up an appointed board, if you will, to be essentially the decision makers for utility activities and investment decisions, things like that. With those members, those appointed members, answerable to the elected body of the City Commission.
Okay.
Thank you. Looking forward to the written report. Thank you. All right. On to the Clean Power Plan update. And we have a quick staff report on some of the updates first.
Any
Good morning, Commissioners. Catherine Cowdery and Mark Futrell. This update covers the time period from the last Internal Affairs on February 23rd. On that same date, about 10 intervener and amicus briefs supporting the state's challenge to the Clean Power Plan were filed. These briefs were filed by municipal electric authorities, members of Congress, former public utilities commissioners, coal companies, consumer groups, state and local business associations, and individual businesses. On March 28th, EPA filed its brief in support of the Clean Power Plan. And this brief answers the arguments that were raised by the petitioner's briefs. The main points addressed by EPA are that it properly exercised its authority by including generation shifting as the best adequately demonstrated system of emissions, and this is means shifting from the high carbon sources to the lower carbon sources. That's just the sort of the main point. Their argument is that regulation of hazardous pollution emissions under the Clean Air Act, Section 112, does not bar regulation of CO2 emissions under 111D. The rule poses no constitutional issues, but exemplifies cooperative federalism, again, in response to the petitioner's challenge, and that there were no procedural errors, all statutory requirements were considered. They recently calculated the state-specific goals and determined that all states were able to come up with compliant plans. The parties have been directed by the court to file a unified format proposal for the June 2nd oral argument that's coming up. On May 29th, interveners in support of the Clean Power Plan filed their briefs. There were four intervener briefs filed. They were by a group of environmental and public health organizations, a brief by certain electric utilities, brief by certain renewables, and brief by certain state and municipal interveners. And this particular brief included South Miami and Broward County. Then on April 1st, 18 amicus curiae briefs were filed in support of the Clean Power Plan. And the brief filed by local government interests included Coral Gables, West Palm Beach, Pinecrest, Cutler Bay, Miami, Miami Beach, and Orlando, Florida. The next step is petitioner's reply briefs, which are due on April 15th, and again, oral argument on the Clean Power Plan litigation in front of the circuit court is set for June 2nd. There's the separate litigation, which is for the new reconstructed and modified sources as opposed to the existing sources. The court has set up a briefing schedule on that. Petitioner's briefs, that would include Florida, are due July 15th. Respondent, EPA, that brief is due September 23rd. Petitioner's reply briefs are due October 21st. There are final briefs due November 14th. Oral argument hasn't been set yet, but apparently this typically does not happen before 45 days after the final briefs are filed, so we're looking at, for that particular rule, no earlier than January of 2017 for oral argument on that rule.
Thank you. Thanks for the update. We've all been getting your emails, I'm sure, and appreciate it. I know Commissioner Edgar has also been busy, and Commissioner Edgar, would you like to provide an update?
Oh, thank you. Very, very briefly, Catherine, as always, has been a great summary. The legal arguments remain fascinating. I actually commend the briefs to you. I'm still working my way through them, but the legal arguments are intriguing. I have had the opportunity to meet in the last few weeks with senior officials at DEP. Notwithstanding the stay, the coordination between our agencies within our different and separate areas of authority and jurisdiction, I think, are important, and I appreciate your confidence in me and continuing those efforts.
Thank you for doing that, and thank you guys again. Keep us informed, and we appreciate it. Thank you. And Keith just began this earlier, the last month, and I know you've been having a lot of meetings with folks and getting acclimated, so we're not going to put pressure on you for your general counsel's report.
I can give you a quick.
Okay, great.
Like for 3 weeks.
Going.
I talked to Commissioner Graham just before the meeting, and the agenda conference today, my second agenda conference, and I asked him, is this as good as it gets? And he goes, well, it can certainly get worse. But I took that as a sign of optimism, because he did not say it will get worse. Just, you know, so thank you for that.
Anything
can happen. So I, as you know, I started the 14th. I think I'm off to a pretty good start. I'm pretty impressed, so impressed with our staff, and thoroughly enjoy being here. As I said on February 23rd, I'm deeply honored to serve as your general counsel, and the past 3 weeks have only confirmed that for me. As I was talking to Commissioner Petronas, he goes, so what's it been like for the past 3 weeks? And it's been a whirlwind. 3 weeks have passed with the blink of an eye, and I can tell you it's been 3 weeks of passwords, administrative members, phone numbers, nomenclature, procedure, process, questions, getting to know my staff. One of the things I've done with my staff is, and I wanted to do this in several different ways, but in order to get to know them better, one of the things I've done is take each of my sections out to lunch, and I ask them where they wanted to go, and I let them choose that, and they all voted and had some, you know, decisions, but we did that, and it's certainly given me a better understanding of their backgrounds, personalities, their personal lives, as well as offered me the opportunity to share my background and my interests. So I think that's been pretty helpful. I seem to be getting pretty good reaction to that. I think soon what I'd like to do is start individual briefings with attorneys to get a better idea of what their day-to-day workload is and focus and interests are in this exciting workplace. And I intend to always, as I've told you, each of you and all of you, make myself accessible to them and continuously reach out and make sure that they're doing okay. I'd like to thank Braulio Baez and publicly and Lisa Harvey for extending hospitality and making me feel just not just comfortable but also supported. I look forward to getting to know them better. Past several weeks, there have been a few legal and practical issues that have arisen, which I think I've contributed towards the resolution of. And in addition, I focused on ethics, which is an ongoing priority of mine. I want to make sure that we're ahead of the curve as much as we can be. And I know each of you take this aspect of your job very seriously, as you should. And I'm mindful of your time, which is very valuable. So you might have noticed in some of the opinions we've taken a slight different approach. That is, we've started out each opinion with a quick summary that's tailored to the facts and issues at hand, so you can get a quick read of what the answer is, because some of the information is repetitive, but you want to get into it deeper, and there is value in constantly being reminded of what you're doing. But it's also important to be able to get a quick read, and that will change depending on the facts of a situation, but you should have the value of being able to see what the main points are on one page pretty quickly, so you can move along with your business. In this regard, I've gotten to know Adria better, and certainly not to the exclusion of anyone else. I think we have such a talented, delightful, and a dedicated and thoughtful lawyer in this area of law. And I strongly encourage each of you, I hope you continue to take advantage of the opportunity she brings to all of us, to ask her your questions anytime, open door policy with her and with me, with any event that you might be attending. I think we can add a lot of value, and so I want to continue to add a lot of value for you in that regard. Finally, I look forward to focusing on procedure and learning the subject matter of rate setting as we move forward. I guess I'll be thick into that with the Florida and Power and Light case and be well educated maybe after that case. I'm also excited about continuing to develop relationships with you and your staff, as well as my own legal staff and the many talented technical staff that serve this commission. So thank you again for this opportunity, and that's what 3 weeks has been like.
Keith, thank you so much. And personally, it's only been 3 weeks, but I've enjoyed working with you thus far. Your professionalism, thoughtfulness, and really accessibility is just very impressive, and looking forward to a very fulfilling relationship here. So thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioners, any other points? Well, thank you for your first update. On to Executive Director Report, Braulio.
Thanks, Chairman. Commissioners, the only update is the budget that we've been tracking all along, but since our last meeting, the budget went final. As you recall, we had a modest reduction of about $198,000 to our line, and on the that represented a reduction of three positions. And on the plus side, we finally got a little vehicle money. So we can start refreshing our fleet. but it was a short LBR for us this year, and it's now gone fine. If you have any questions or want to dig into it, be happy to meet with you.
Thank you. I'm sure we will.
There wasn't a whole lot of detail, frankly, but you know, not this year anymore.
Commissioners, any questions of Mr. Baez? Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Commissioners.
Other matters. Well, Commissioners, this past month of March, we did not have an internal affair, so I wanted to just present our Employee of the Month, who is sitting right in the front row, Ms. Jennifer Crawford from our legal department. I have to tell you, I had such a great time talking with her and meeting with her. She's one of the kindest, most thoughtful people at the commission and really cares about the work that she does, and she's fortunate that she has a good support staff here, including her family, and a lot of friends here, and she's very talented and really is just a pleasure to be around, and want to congratulate you on this award. I hope you enjoyed your parking spot this month, and I'm really proud of you. Thank you. And if there are no other matters, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.